Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi is safely on the ground in Taiwan after weeks of threats from the Chinese Communist Party. Crisis averted? Also ahead, Al-Qaeda chief Ayman al-Zawahiri gets smoked in a U.S. drone strike more than 20 years after the 9/11 attacks he helped plot and carry out. I'll take a look at these stories and more in tonight's Hard to Watch. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. Pelosi goes to Taiwan. Media is fascinated by this. There was a lot of consternation in the run-up to it that this was risking some kind of major Chinese response, and yet on the day of, in the moments leading up to it, it seemed everybody had sort of resigned themselves to the reality that the Chinese weren't actually going to do anything really about this. And they haven't, as we go to air right now, and it seemed very unlikely. So what was all the focus about? Well, first off, once it was leaked that Pelosi was going to Taiwan, and that became a story in the media, well then, she is the Speaker of the House. This is the United States. She's one of ours. We got to back up the Speaker of the House going to a foreign country and not bending the knee to a third country, China, that thinks that they're allowed to dictate where our people go. So, for example, Republican Senator Dan Sullivan said, look, we're closing ranks behind Pelosi on this because this is about America. Watch.
At the end of the day, you do not want the Chinese Communist Party dictating to senior American leaders where they can and cannot travel. So we are where we are on this. You know, you can do a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking of how it became such a contentious issue. My view, and I think the view of a number of senators, is that we should close ranks now and not let the Chinese Communist Party try to drive wedges between American elected officials or the White House on whether or not she should be there. She's there. We're supporting the trip, and we're closing ranks behind her.
Look, we can't. As he says, we can't make it seem like our officials bend the knee to the Communist Party of China on a matter like this. But there's also the why are we doing this? What is gained from this? We were led to believe there was certainly the possibility of some kind of major escalation over it. China, this is from Reuters, to launch targeted military operations due to Pelosi's visit. The Chinese military has been put on high alert and will launch targeted military operations in response to U.S. House Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. China's defense ministry said on Tuesday night. Separately, the People's Liberation Army's Eastern Theater Command said it will conduct joint military operations near Taiwan from Tuesday night. So they're saying they're going to do some stuff. Is this going to be anything that really escalates, or is this just a show of force? And then there'll be a bunch of state media statements coming out of Beijing and the various organs of the Chinese Communist Party information apparatus saying, ah, see, we showed them that we will do anything for the reunification and the One China policy, et cetera, et cetera. So looks like it'll be a lot of saber rattling, not much more than that. But this is interesting. Here's former Obama NSC official. Now, among Democrats, a lot of people have different views on this. This doesn't necessarily go down the usual my side, your side party lines. Here's a former Obama NSC official saying that this is a trip that actually doesn't serve U.S. interests. Watch.
Well, I think this is a trip which does not serve U.S. interests. It's because of Speaker Pelosi's desire to go. I think people in the administration were not enthusiastic about it for the start, but unfortunately, Speaker Pelosi apparently decided to proceed and required that President Biden call her to call off, which he didn't do.
Now, what will really be gained from this? Does it really change anything? Because it is the policy of the Chinese Communist Party, has been for decades, that there will be a reunification with Taiwan, that Taiwan is Chinese territory. That is their official stated policy, has been forever, basically. Here is the Chinese ambassador to the U.S. today saying that don't think that the reunification is going to be stopped when it comes to Taiwan. It's happening. Watch.
China's sovereignty cannot be infringed, and the Chinese people cannot be humiliated, and the reunification of China cannot be stopped. We will take whatever we can to respond and to protect, to safeguard our sovereignty, territorial integrity. And our response will be very firm, strong, and forceful.
Very strong and forceful. Does that actually sound like what's happening right now? Or is this just a bunch of diplomatic tempest in a teapot situation? Because it doesn't look like really anything's going to happen. Oh, they're going to fly some planes and test Taiwanese airspace. And, you know, they'll put some ships in a provocative formation in the Taiwan Straits. And they'll put out some statements and maybe take some kind of economic measures. But in terms of anything that gets people really worried over here, I don't think anything's going to happen. But what was the purpose of Pelosi then? She went, she is the highest ranking official since 1997 to visit the island nation of Taiwan. And U.S. policy, though, still maintains this strategic ambiguity. So maybe we would do something if China made a move on Taiwan. We're not going to say one way or the other, but we're going to leave out the possibility. By the way, you always have some level of strategic ambiguity, even if you don't say you do, right? We could say we're going to back up Taiwan, and then China goes with enough force. We say, you know what? We changed our minds. That's just the world. That's reality. That can happen. So what exactly do we take from the Pelosi visit? I think the Democrats just want to talk about something other than the economy in the United States, honestly, because it's not going to do very much. It's not going to do anything, really. Then there's the killing of Ayman al-Zawahiri. Now, this feels good for America because it's justice, and that's good. Biden actually said justice has been delivered, and he is correct in that. Watch.
Now, justice has been delivered. And this terrorist leader is no more. People around the world no longer need to fear the vicious and determined killer. The United States continues to demonstrate our resolve and our capacity to defend the American people against those who seek to do us harm. You know, we make it clear again tonight that no matter how long it takes, no matter where you hide, if you are a threat to our people, the United States will find you and take you out.
So it's a good thing that this happened. This is justice. It's not something that people should be, you know, spraying the champagne and spiking the football in the end zone about, because it took over 20 years to get him. And he's evil, and he's just another evil player who's been taken off the chessboard. It does not actually solve our problem of jihadist terror, of al-Qaeda, of the reality of Afghanistan. In fact, a lot of people are now looking at the situation in Afghanistan and saying, so the leader of al-Qaeda, the former number two to bin Laden, was living in a nice house in downtown Kabul, in a house with ties to the Haqqani network. who are also terrorists and also have U.S. blood on their hands. And he moved there to be with his family because a terrorist regime is running the country of Afghanistan again after 20 years of U.S. war there. The Taliban is running the show, and they are still jihadists. They're just being somewhat more muted in their support for the jihad these days. So what does this mean for us going forward? I mean, how do we actually handle this new reality of an Afghanistan that feels like it has reverted back to the bad days of Taliban control in the 1990s, and that led to 9/11, as we all recall, something we all need to think about. We'll have more on the death of al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri and what it means with senior fellow at the Foundation Defense of Democracies, Bill Roggio, coming up. First, I want to talk to you about protecting your online data. A lot of companies promise your privacy is guaranteed, but that's not true. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using any of the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Without real security, people can read your emails, messages, even your bank information. Secure will never mine your data and never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, or anyone else with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 to the messenger, only $10 to the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com and use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back with more. Hold the line. After more than two decades on the run, Ayman al-Zawahiri, one of the architects of the 9/11 attacks and leader of al-Qaeda since 2011, has been killed in a U.S. drone strike in Kabul, Afghanistan. According to reports, the house al-Zawahiri was in when he was killed was owned by a top aide to Taliban Interior Minister Sirajuddin Haqqani, raising new questions about the Taliban's relationship with the terrorist organization. So what does al-Zawahiri's death mean for the ongoing war on terror? Joining me now to give his insight into the killing of the al-Qaeda leader, senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Bill Roggio. Bill, first off, I mean, this operation, what do you think about this? What does everyone need to know about how this all came together? I think it has made the ninja missile, fired by drone, famous for all time.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly is a successful operation. It's been in the planning for at least 6 months. The U.S. had good intelligence on Zawahiri that it seems to me that Zawahiri got overconfident in Afghanistan and moved there to be with his family after the Taliban takeover. He got sloppy. This is a guy who's been on the run for over 20 years, one of the most wanted men in the world. And, top al-Qaeda leaders or all of al-Qaeda leaders, they don't retire. They either are killed or they die of old age. And he happened to be killed in his old age.
So what is the fact that Zawahiri was killed in a house owned by a Taliban official tell us here? I mean, there's some concerning after effects, I think, we all have to consider here, not of the assassination, but of the what the heck is going on in Afghanistan, given the Taliban rule there.
Yeah, this was entirely predictable. I noted when the deal was struck under the Trump administration and when the withdrawal began that Afghanistan would become a safe haven for al-Qaeda. And this is what happened. Sirajuddin Haqqani is not just a mere Taliban official. He's one of their two deputy leaders. He's probably next in line in succession for the Taliban. And as the interior minister, he is one of the most, the most powerful Taliban leader in Afghanistan. That's just not my assessment. That's others. Played an instrumental role in sheltering al-Qaeda in both Afghanistan and Pakistan over the last two decades. Sheltered bin Laden's families and bin Laden himself, Zawahiri's family. And he is the apex Taliban leader. And we shouldn't be shocked by any of this. We've targeted Sirajuddin Haqqani in numerous drone strikes in Pakistan in the late 2000s and early to mid 2010s. Everyone told us that al-Qaeda was dead. They were gone. President Biden said that on August 20th at the time of withdrawal last year. And al-Qaeda isn't gone. Its leader was in Kabul. The United Nations sanctioned a monitoring team stated just several in a report several weeks ago that top Al-Qaeda leadership was providing strategic advice to the Taliban. And lo and behold, we kill the Al-Qaeda's top leader inside Kabul, and one of the top leaders of the Taliban in a home related, you know, associated with the top leader of the Taliban. None of this should come as any surprise to anyone who's been paying attention.
Is the Taliban abiding by the agreement that we have with them, whatever that agreement really stands for, whatever it really is?
Yeah, that agreement was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my lifetime. I've signed car loan agreements and insurance documents that were longer than the 3 1/3 pages that that so-called agreement outlined. The Taliban said that it wouldn't allow Afghanistan to be used as a base to launch attacks against the West. And yet here we have Al-Qaeda's top leader living in Kabul under the protection of the Taliban. But we knew before the deal was signed and immediately after the deal was signed that it was all a farce, for instance. And right after the deal was signed, several months before the deal was signed in 2020, we killed the head of Al-Qaeda's in the Indian subcontinent. It's their branch in South Asia. He was killed in a U.S. military operation in southern Afghanistan. And several Al-Qaeda leaders were killed in Afghanistan after that time. But the lie that the Taliban has told the world that it would disassociate from Al-Qaeda and or actually it would not allow Afghanistan to be used as a base to attack the West, it was one that was easily believed by both Trump and Biden administration officials, because at the end of the day, they wanted to leave Afghanistan, and that was all that was important.
Switching over to Ukraine, there was a piece in the New York Times yesterday, I think it's a Tom Friedman op-ed, where he said that the relationship between the White House and President Zelensky of Ukraine is somewhat strained. He writes, "The Ukraine war is not over, and privately, U.S. officials are a lot more concerned about Ukraine's leadership than they are letting on. There is deep mistrust between the White House and President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine, considerably more than has been reported." What can you tell us about this? Because there's been a hero worship around Zelensky in the corporate media overwhelmingly now for 8 months. So apparently there's some concern. What are those concerns? What can you tell us?
Yeah, we're starting to see the cracks in what we described it perfectly in the hero worship narrative that we've been witnessing, particularly since the war started with Zelensky. There's always been concerns about Ukraine, about Zelensky, about the units of the Ukrainian military that were actually, that wear insignia of the SS and are related to right wing political leanings. So that's always existed, but that was all pushed to the side after Russia invaded Ukraine. And then the narrative switched to one of everything that Zelensky did was fantastic. But then you saw the firing of basically their intelligence chief and their attorney general on the same day with very, very little explanation. The explanation that was given was that that they were soft on these apparently traitors within their organizations who were given information or supporting Russia. But there's been other concerns, shutting down political parties and media bans, things like that, that are, this has all been simmering. And now the lid's starting to come off and we're starting to see a little bit of the steam. This is to be expected in a war that was supposed to end in days, but is now dragging on into half a year.
What's happening right now, by the way, in Ukraine? We don't really hear much about it.
Yeah, after the Russians seized all of Luhansk province, they took a pause, and it seems like they're making some small gains. We're starting to see little gains. They just took over Ukraine's second largest power plant in Donetsk province. It took control of a couple of small towns. They do appear to be advancing. Again, this is a slow grinding advance. We're not looking at blitzkrieg operations here, but they are continuing to grind down the Ukrainian military. Ukrainian military is becoming more and more dependent on Western support. And it's going to be interesting to see once the fall and winter comes how supportive, particularly the European countries, will be once their gas supplies start running low, assuming the Russians keep reduce the amount of gas they're sending to Ukraine.
Indeed. Bill, always appreciate your expertise, sir. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much, Bud.
Former Daily Show host Jon Stewart got into a heated confrontation with Human Events' Jack Posobiec at a recent rally for veterans' health care. Jack stops by in a moment to explain what actually went down. Right now, let me tell you about one of my favorite new sponsors at Hold the Line. If you're looking for a delicious treat, but you don't want all the fat and calories, you have to try a Built Bar. Built Bars are high protein, low carb, low calorie, low fat. I just had one this morning, actually. When I first tried them a few weeks ago, I was blown away that they're actually good for you. They're gluten-free and keto-friendly. I can't eat gluten, so this is great for me. And they're made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently. A lot of health benefits, too. They're all covered in 100% real chocolate. They have incredible flavors like mint brownie, coconut, salted caramel, cookies and cream. The best part, Built Bars taste better than candy bars. I'm telling you, they're that good. Try a mixed box so you get the whole variety. You can see which ones you like best. They're all amazing, though. Go to Built.com. When you use my promo code BUCK15, you'll get 15% off your order. That's Built.com, promo code BUCK15. Jack Posobiec comes with us in just a moment.
And now they say, well, this will get done maybe in the after we get back from our summer recess, maybe during the lame duck, because they're on Senate time. Do you understand? You live around here. Senate time is ridiculous. These live to 200.
Jon Stewart speaking publicly about his support for the American veterans who became ill with various diseases after constant exposure to toxic burn pits while serving overseas. The former Daily Show host has become an outspoken advocate for veterans in recent years. But at a rally earlier this week, the short-tempered Stewart got into a heated exchange with my next guest. Watch.
Get this passed over the line. Because these people have suffered for 15 years. Because you're a
Look at them in the
troll.
Face. Look at them in
you're
the face.
You're a troll.
Guys, I want the bill passed.
You're not in good right. faith.
I'm for the right. bill.
You're not in good faith.
So what's the problem? What are you trying to do here?
My question is,
what
are
you
trying to do here? Why is John, I'm not even against you guys.
What are you trying to do?
Then what are you doing? Then what are you...
Join me now. Tell us how and why it all went down. Senior editor at Human Events, Jack Posobiec. Jack, quite a moment there. You got to tell us what led up to it. What was that all about?
Yeah, Buck. And what's really interesting about that is that, you know, you got a situation where that's just one clip of the whole thing. Fortunately for me and really for the veterans involved in this, I'm a veteran myself. I know you served overseas, you know, you've been around burn pits and all of this, that we were actually able to patch things up and have come to a good agreement afterwards.
Can I jump in, Jack, real quick, just because we do have that. So we'll show that part of it.
And you can
tell us what happened. Here's Jon Stewart actually apologizing after that incident. Watch this.
This is Jack Posobiec. I'm here with Tim Jensen of Gruntstyle and...
Hello.
Jon Stewart is also here. Jon Stewart and I have decided to come to agreement. Have we not, Jon?
Yes, sir. I lost my temper a little bit. I felt like I was being trolled. And I realized that the important thing is you just got to get this done for these guys and get them over the finish line to get the health care they need.
We're at 98%. Let's get it over the last 2%.
Please.
Is that fair?
Fair.
You shake on it?
7-5, brother.
Do or die.
Well, it's nice that that's actually how the situation ended up. I'm glad we could show that for full context as well, Jack. But I mean, so what's going on here, right? I mean, you got people yelling, people angry. Everyone wants veterans to get the health care that they are owed, not just that they deserve. We owe it to them. What's going on?
100%. And look, as a vet myself, you know, I know people in units that I served in who were affected by these burn pits. We had a girl in one of my units who came back from Afghanistan and experienced issues afterwards. Hair started falling out, nails started falling out, fingernails and toenails. I mean, just bad stuff. People have lung issues, can't go over certain altitudes, fly in planes, that type of thing. It's a whole mess. But the problem was that when I went up and started asking questions, I said, John, and I think he thought that, you know, oh, this guy is from right-wing Twitter and therefore he's an enemy and had kind of, you know, maybe heard or asked about me, you know, to some of the, you know, his Hollywood buddies or something. And, you know, not to put words in his mouth, but, you know, maybe he had a certain kind of an idea of what I wanted to say and what I wanted to do there and wasn't really listening to me at first about this issue of the $400 billion that Republicans like Cruz and Toomey and others have come in and said, we want to account for this differently because we don't want it to be open-ended and give the Democrats who currently control the Senate an ability to spend an extra $400 billion in a discretionary cap between now and Election Day. And now that did mean that it held up the bill. And I can understand being frustrated about that, and I can understand being angry about that, and I certainly am as well, because I want that bill passed. But the process is the process, Buck, and you understand that, and I think everybody in the audience understands that. So my issue was that instead of going on media and bashing Republicans and politicizing the whole thing, could we maybe find a way, just as I said in the end there, this thing's at 98%. We just need to get to that last 2% over the finish line, and I don't think that running around throwing mud is the way to get it done.
So it seems like it all turns on whether there was some, let's be honest, some Democrat senatorial trick here to try to change some mechanism within the bill so that there was effectively hundreds of billions of dollars that they could then spend on whatever they want without actually even having to name what it is. It would have been appropriated without specification. Is that what happened, and is that accurate? Are we sure that that is the situation?
Well, that is, and that's exactly what Toomey and Cruz and others have said. And Noah Rothman's got a piece up at Commentary walking through all the, you know, the machinations of this right now. If you want to go read that, he's done an excellent job of laying it out. But that really is what's going on, and that the Republicans feel that it gives, you know, these huge purse strings to the Democrats. And in an election year, obviously, we know that what are the Democrats going to do if they get an extra $400 billion to spend? We're going to see student loans. You're going to see green giveaways. You're going to see all sorts of stuff that they use to try to bring people to the polls in a situation like that. And so what I said to John and to Tim Jensen, some of the guys said, look, you know, it's not about the politics. It's about figuring out a way to get this bill passed. And if that means compromising, if that means sitting down and talking this out, then why don't we do that instead of just throwing mud all over the place? Because look, you know, I can be a little pugnacious on Twitter. John Stewart, of course, he's got a, you know, his entire brand and his whole career behind him. And so we could do that. We could do that all day long and get millions of views and whatever. But would we actually get the bill passed? I don't think so. So why don't we look at this as something where we put the labels aside and actually try to shake hands and do the right thing for these vets?
You had a tweet out, by the way, supporting the victims of the burn pits, members of the U.S. military. Politicians need to sit down and figure this out. If that means talking to the other side and listening, then we do it. I know I am willing to. The veteran victims of the burn pits deserve it. Politicians sent them to war. Politicians can do right by them. I think well said there, Jack. Also, just wanted to get your take today, Jack, as a former naval intelligence officer and a Mandarin speaker, which is always very impressive. I think people find that out. Pelosi went to Taiwan today. What does it mean?
Well, Pelosi going to Taiwan, unfortunately, I think this means a lot more in terms of headlines in theater than it does in actual changes on the ground or changes in the status quo. At the end of the day, the PLA has their military advantage because they've been funded by and large by Western capital. The fact that these tariffs, the Biden administration is talking about pulling them down, that would put more financing into the CCP, that they would turn right back over to the PLA. We've isolated Taiwan for all these years. It's been the West and you and administration after administration, with the exception of perhaps the 45th president, have really done all this work of isolating Taiwan. So for her to just go and visit there and say that she's going to change everything because she went out, I think it really shows a couple of things. Number one, her and her husband got caught recently doing this semiconductor swap, this trade deal that they wanted, a stock part purchase that she was doing. They got caught before she went over to Taiwan and before they were able to pass this CHIPS bill in the Senate, which would have included massive subsidies for semiconductors. Where the semiconductors constructed, the NVIDIA plant, 15 out of 18, they're on the island of Taiwan. It's the semiconductor Silicon Valley West. We're also seeing that I think it's a big sign that this is towards the end of Pelosi's career. She started her career in 1991, was one of the first people to go over and unfurl this banner pro-democracy in Beijing. Now, here we are. She's at the tail end of her career. She knows she's probably going to be out of the speakership in just a couple of months. So going to Taiwan kind of bookends those two things for her. But in terms of actually helping the people on the ground, the people of Taiwan and the people, by the way, of China that have to live under the repressive CCP regime, it doesn't really amount to much more than anything other than headlines and PR.
Jack, thanks so much for joining us on this one. Appreciate it, buddy.
Appreciate it always, Buck.
Democrats have been claiming the Manchin-Schumer Inflation Reduction Act will not raise taxes on anyone earning less than $400,000 a year. But a new report says otherwise. We'll have more on that with First TV's Tina Lowe in a moment. But I want to give you a warning as a homeowner. You could already be the victim of home title theft and not have a clue. Some cyber thief may have already forged his name onto the title to your home. Here's how you find out. My partners at Home Title Lock have a special free offer for my listeners. Go to HometitleLock.com, then simply enter your address to see, and there's no obligation, by the way. Your obligation is zero, but you can have a home title scan. Now, this is important. If you discover a cyber thief is already camping on your home's title, well, you're going to be glad you ran the scan. The title to your home is the only document that proves you own it. Once he forges it, he can take out loans on your home or forge your name stating he's the new owner. First things first, let's make sure your home's title is securely in your name. You can do that by going to HometitleLock.com and use my promo code RADIO. Then enter your address for free, no obligation. That's right. It's a $100 value, by the way. HometitleLock.com, code RADIO. HometitleLock.com, code RADIO. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line. A new report finds the Manchin-Schumer Inflation Reduction Act will raise taxes on Americans of all incomes, specifically the middle class, but the Biden administration is in denial because, well, it doesn't fit the narrative. Watch.
Is President Biden thinking about pulling his support for the Inflation Reduction Act?
No.
Because he promised it wasn't going to make... It wasn't going to raise taxes on anybody making less than $400,000 a year, but the Joint Committee on Taxation says that is not true.
Well, that isn't correct.
So the Joint Committee on Taxation, which you guys heralded as an effective body when you were selling that infrastructure package, is not to be trusted here.
I said it is not correct because I'll give you why it's not correct, because it is incomplete.
Ah. Okay. Joining me now with reaction, contributor here at the First, Tina Lowe. Tina, is it correct? What is correct? Tell us the truth about the taxes.
So there have been a couple of estimates of this bill, and it either does not have any impact on inflation, or it ever so slightly does increase inflation. Now, the tax system, the problem is that there are so many credits in there that we have no idea what the use case is going to be. And also, we still don't know what the final bill is going to look like because we haven't heard anything from Kyrsten Sinema. And this thing doesn't happen, period, if Kyrsten Sinema says no. Remember, it's August. Elections are in November. We have all of a recess to account for, and we have multiple senators who are evading getting COVID right now. So we have no idea if this is even the bill, because if this is not the bill, there is not that much time that Democrats have to take this to the parliamentarian to get this passed via reconciliation. So we know that there are some tax increases in this. The question is, does it net tax individuals or households under $400,000? The White House is obviously intentionally dodging on because they're writing this bill sort of as they go along. We're waiting still on a full CBO score for it, and that's considered, you know, the gold standard. But it does seem like, yes, it does increase taxes. And here's the dirty secret about inflation. One of the only things Congress and the presidency is capable of doing for staving off inflation or for trying to lessen inflation is, in fact, increasing taxes. But that's a politically impossible thing to do because, especially right now with this sort of 70s-style stagflation, that is hitting the people who need the most relief, increasing taxes, right? And it's kind of why we don't get into 9% inflation, because getting out of 9% inflation is this politically painful. So Biden's really stuck. He can either tout this thing as an Inflation Reduction Act and point out that it raises taxes, or just admit that it's trying to be, you know, a green spending bill and say that it doesn't reduce inflation. So there's no great political answer for him. And for what it's worth, Joe Manchin's priorities are extremely confusing because he's sort of just...
Can I ask you about that? What do you think... Let's just get down to brass tacks for a second. People are saying, well, Joe Manchin's a Democrat, so why are you surprised? Okay, but what was all the gamesmanship? I'm not even talking about when it was a $3 or $4 or $5 trillion bill, depending on, you know, whose final numbers you believed from what was it now, 6, 7, 8 months ago. He was saying a few weeks ago, Green New Deal stuff, I'm not on board. Now he's hundreds of billions of dollars of green energy stuff. He's like, yeah, let's go for it. Why?
So Joe Manchin has two priorities, or three, really. One, reduce the deficit. This probably does reduce the deficit, and we need deficit reduction, but at what cost? How are we reducing the deficit? Are we doing it with onerous tax increases, right? Thing number two, more oil, more offshore drilling permits. That's apparently a part of his White House deal, that if he signs on to this, that, you know, the Interior Department will authorize more offshore drilling permits. And thing number three, that it doesn't, that he's able to pass a climate bill that does not hamper the coal jobs in his own state. And this one does not. I mean, it's hard to call this bill a conservative success, but if you do compare it, like, from what it was scaled down from, right, then yes, this is definitely a win because it's extremely modest in what it does. But what you wind up is sort of just a bill that's just a series of weird tax credits that don't really do that much. Like, fuck, are you really going to tell me that, like, for the average American family, a $7,500 tax credit to buy a Tesla is going to really change their buying habits? I don't think so.
Yeah, you just got to come up with the other 50 grand or so in, you know, couch cushion cash. By the way, the Congress Committee on Joint Committee on Taxation had this assessment out there. This goes to what Corinne Jean-Pierre was getting into it with Steve Ducey over, or Peter Ducey, whatever. Less than 200K, the income is going to have a $16 billion tax increase. Between 200 and 500K, up $14.1 billion. Like, can't we know who's telling the truth and who's not? Because here, for example, here's Joe Manchin, who's saying that's a straight up lie. Watch this.
Who's paying any taxes that doesn't have a corporation that has revenue of over $1 billion a year? Not one person. Not one person, Harris. You're assuming because they'll pass that on. The companies were paying zero.
No. I'm asking a different question than you're answering. I'm saying Americans, $400,000 and below now, are going to be taxed. Their taxes are going to go up.
That's a lie. That is a pure, outright lie.
So their taxes are not going to go up.
Not at all.
Okay. I mean, when you're saying things like that's a lie, you better be damn sure, although politicians lie all the time, so maybe they don't even know what the word means. What do we think here? Like, how are we at this point? It's not like they're saying, well, it could be in the future. Yes or no, do we know?
I mean, it's pretty clear that if you're not, like, doing gamesmanship with the tax credits, if you look individually, yeah, there are tax increases for households under $400,000. It's modest in comparison to what the left, to what the alternatives, not just pushed by the left, but also by this White House, are. It's definitely modest. But yeah, those tax hikes are there. I think it's important just to put into context how this bill was brokered. This happened because Joe Biden got coronavirus. This happened because Joe Biden was physically removed from the rest of his staff that kept on nuking negotiations with Manchin and Sinema for the past year and a half. So this one really came when Biden was able to send over Chris Coons as an envoy, Larry Summers as an envoy, and keep it away from the woke White House staffers. So this all came together in the last 2.5 weeks. It did not predate that. So again, we're talking about bills that are hundreds of pages long, bills that nobody has a chance to finish reading. And again, the CBO hasn't even scored it. They don't even have their arguments ready for reconciliation. This is going to be a process. So Manchin's probably getting blindsided by these questions because he doesn't even know the answer to them. That's not great for a senator trying to push a bill, but that's the reality here. He doesn't know. He does not know.
There's also this statement from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. I bet they throw fun parties. The White House should especially avoid measures that would worsen inflation, such as extending the student debt repayment pause. We hear about canceling student debt still. We hear about extending the repayment pause. What is it looking like on this one? Anything going to happen?
So it looks like the administration, even without explicitly extending the pause, they have already asked lenders not to restart payment due dates. So you have to remember that this pause is explicitly inflationary. Why? Not just because it keeps liquidity in the market in the form of letting borrowers not pay that back, such as more consumer spending, but it specifically does it for a higher income bracket. If you look at how student debt is distributed. It is overwhelmingly to higher income earners. It is overwhelmingly to the wealthy. We're not talking about making sure that people living paycheck to paycheck are able to pay for food, gas. This is stuff that is driving inflationary spending right now because we do have the demand problem. So by keeping that pause extended, and also remember, that rate of what borrowers have to pay back is not adjusted for inflation, and it's not adjusted to add interest. So that's a fixed amount. So if you owed, I don't know, $300 a month 2 years ago, it's still $300. It's not $300 plus the inflation of the past year. And remember, this year alone, these, you know, if you just cut inflation from January to July of this year, we've already had 6% inflation. So that's not accounting for that. And if you're on Social Security and you're receiving Social Security payments, you are receiving income that is adjusted for inflation. So the benefits are adjusted for inflation, but the payments back to Uncle Sam are not adjusted for inflation. And just to correct the record, Committee for Responsible Federal Budget throws great parties because they had Evan Spiegel of Snapchat at their last one. Very fascinating conversation, Doc. I did have to throw that one out there.
You learn something new every day. Tina,
right?
Thanks for being with us. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Billionaire George Soros is publicly denying far-left prosecutors he bankrolled have anything to do with the spike in crime in cities around the U.S. We'll have that story for you in quick hits, but first let me tell you about a potential opportunity. A lot of you are worried about the reported food shortages and power outages headed our way, and you're not alone. If you look at the skyrocketing cost of energy and food prices going through the roof, we're certainly heading in the wrong direction. Many are choosing to go off-grid. When you think of going off-grid, you think of living perhaps in the mountains, far from civilization. But there's a safe option for going totally off-grid in Panama, Central America, and a modern home starts at only $100,000. These homes are fully set up on a self-sustaining farm with all your needs met right on the property. Panama offers a stable government, cost-effective, high-quality medical care, and a fantastic climate. There are only 24 homes being offered in the community, so reach out to them quickly at offgridpanama.com or call them at 904-236-4737. That's 904-236-4737, or just go to offgridpanama.com. We'll be right back with Quick Hits. Stay with us. George Soros, defending his support of far-left prosecutors, and former President Trump makes an interesting endorsement in the GOP Missouri Senate primary. We've got those stories on Quick Hits. Let's get right to it. First of all, Soros is a menace to criminal justice. And the fact that he has spent millions of dollars, this is a matter of public record, millions of dollars on progressive prosecutors in cities all over America, really seeding some of the biggest cities in the United States with lunatic, left-wing, soft-on-crime, social and racial justice maniacs. This has resulted in deterioration of safety and just general living conditions in cities all over America. In reality, that's what's happened. But Soros is a malignant narcissist who doesn't care how much damage he does as long as he gets to feel virtuous flying around in his private jets and showering money on left-wing activist lunatics. So he said in a Wall Street Journal op-ed that there is no connection between the high crime we're seeing and his far-left prosecutors. Some politicians, this is from his Wall Street Journal op-ed, and pundits have tried to blame recent spikes in crime on the policies of reform-minded prosecutors. The research, whatever the hell that means, what research? I've seen a lot of research that disagrees. Anyway, says otherwise, the most rigorous academic study analyzing data across 35 jurisdictions shows no connection between the election of reform-minded prosecutors and local crime rates. How about this connection? He puts these maniacs in prosecutors' offices in cities across the country. The crime rate goes up a lot. In city after city after city. It's a pretty straightforward study, isn't it? The reality that we have seen unfold. Oh, but he's probably pointing to some left-wing end mass incarceration defund police group that he's actually writing the checks for to say, oh, look at their research. He is the worst, folks. I mean, he's at Fauci level of awfulness, which is really saying something. And then there's this, a far-left activist and a new Australian Senator Lydia Thorpe raised her fist as she is sworn in here and calls the Queen, I guess the Queen of England, a colonizer. Watch.
I, Sovereign Lydia Thorpe, do solemnly and sincerely affirm and declare that I will be faithful and I bear true allegiance to the colonizing Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II.
Senator Thorpe. I'm going to wait for quiet. Senator Thorpe, you are required to recite the oath as printed on the card, so please recite the oath.
I, Lydia Thorpe, do solemnly and sincerely affirm and declare that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II.
I mean, I've never heard this person before, just thought that was kind of interesting, I guess. By the way, Trump weighed in on the Missouri Senate GOP primary with an endorsement. He said, we need a person who will not back down to the radical left lunatics who are destroying our country. I trust the great people of Missouri on this one to make up their own minds, much as they did when they gave me landslide victories in 2016 and 2020 elections. And I am therefore proud to announce that Eric has my complete and total endorsement. This was supposed to be a joke, I guess, because they're both Eric. Did we ever find out, guys, by the way, did they make it official which Eric they were? Oh, they just left it like that? Eric Greitens and Eric Schmidt. So they just said Eric. Trying to stir the pot, I guess. Mission accomplished. A Colorado food bank director says they are seeing significantly higher numbers, this is really sad, of families than they did all throughout COVID. Watch.
We're seeing significantly higher numbers of people coming through our food line right now than we did all throughout COVID, even at the peak of COVID. So we are seeing almost 300 households a day, sometimes significantly higher than 300, which is just an enormous number of families that we're trying to support every day.
Sad. That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The
stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.